TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at tntradio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox, lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Deconstructing PSYOPs, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Brian McClain, a.k.a. Hesher, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
That's right. What's up? Welcome to the show. How's everybody doing out there? Hope you're having a great day. What day is this? I think it's Wednesday. I have no idea. We're live from Central Texas. You're listening to today's News Talk, tntradio.live. That's where you find us on the interwebs. Got a great show lined up for you today. Second hour of the show, CeCe Woods will be joining me, my co-host, and we're going to open the phone line. So if you want to talk to CeCe and I about Damar Hamlin, his miraculous recovery, so they say, or if you want to talk to us, more importantly, I don't think everything should be about Damar. We want to talk about other people suddenly dying. All right. There's a rash of this. You can just go to any social media site and type in montage or reporter or whatever. I guess it's Tuesday. Thanks for. All right. Well, okay. So suddenly dying, that's going to be one of our topics during the call-ins. We're also might be looking into the whole concept of biological males doing female sports, or more specifically for today's story, biological females doing men's league sports. So you have that opportunity to call in, talk to CeCe and I in the U.S. That'll be, put this in your phone now, folks. Get used to it. 1-888-201-6425. That's U.S. and Canada. U.K. 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, that's 1-800-670-310. So we're going to light that free speech call-in line today on today's News Talk. And in this hour of the show, we're going to be joined by professor and author Murray Sabrin to talk about his new book. That's going to be super exciting. And we got John Matlin calling in shortly here. That's going to be something special today. It's going to be a little something special today with John. And let's see here. Let's give some cheers and jeers to specific states in the U.S. here. Here's some cheers. New Jersey prohibits use of TikTok and 14 other social media apps on state-owned devices. Wow. Okay, that's probably a good thing. I'm going to chalk that up to a good idea. If you're an employer, you know, state employer, or maybe even a federal employer, this is starting to apply to TikTok on federal devices too. New Jersey is the latest state to ban the use of TikTok on all state-owned or managed devices, along with 14 other social media apps. Democrat Governor Phil Murphy issued a directive on Monday to remove high-risk software on state government devices. TikTok, a popular video-based social media platform, is gradually being banned by both state and federal authorities for its link to the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. So several states have already implemented bans on TikTok, and Congress has been considering a bipartisan proposal to prevent ByteDance, the social media app's parent company, from conducting business transactions anywhere in the United States. So, there you go. There you have it. I don't like the idea of bans, generally speaking. I'm pretty much opposed to that for 9 out of 10 things. But TikTok will give you TikTok brain, and no one should have TikTok brain, especially if you're a kid or if you're a parent of a kid. You don't want to see yourself or your kid get TikTok brain. It's a real thing. All right. And for the jeers section, Illinois, you made my list today. Lawmakers in Illinois on Monday night approved a bill to ban the sale and manufacture of certain semi-automatic weapons, which critics say are commonly used for self-defense and recreation. That's right. That would be us, right? Critics. The Protecting Illinois Communities Act passed the Illinois Senate on Monday night by a vote margin of 34 to 20. The legislation will now return to the State House of Representatives, which passed it on a vote of 64 to 43 on January 6th for a final vote before it goes to Governor J.B. Pritzker, a Democrat who has supported the legislation and is expected to sign it into law. So you got a problem there, Illinois. You've got a problem. You've got a micro tyrant there looking to trample on your constitutional rights. This shall not stand. This aggression shall not stand, man. That rug was really holding the room together there. That rug being the American people's Second Amendment rights. Knock it off, Illinois. Knock it off. What are you people doing there, voting in people like this that want to trample your most sacred constitutional rights? Asking for all my Illinois friends. For all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, then visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch with us on TNT Radio.
Covering the world's news.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
TNT Radio has boots on the ground, coming live from New York State Capitol in Albany with updates in the battle for medical freedom. Is TNT News producer and host John Matlin. John, welcome to the show.
Hesher, it's a real beehive of activity here. So today was the State of the State address by Governor Hochul, and a bunch of groups came to lobby for their cause, of which one was the medical freedom movement. As right now, there is bills set to be pushed forward that can allow 14-year-olds to go and get vaccinated without parent consent. There is, of course, the discussion of if these shots are needed to go to school. There's a whole litany of crazy things that exist that we all know because we're paying attention. And right now, what we've been doing all day is people have been going around for their cause, going to state assembly, and they were leaving off literature, letters signed by Dr. McCullough, all the doctors, really, if you know them, Dr. Merrill Ness, you know, we know them, we've interviewed them all. But there is a lot of stuff going on here as these lawmakers face that moment where they're going to be putting the pen to the paper. So right now, I do not have a guest with me. They opened the Capitol side where the State of the State was held, and now we are in the wing of the Senate. Beautiful building. I got to tell you, the architecture is much better than the state assembly offices that look like your usual office space situation. And right now, the lawmakers are all dining together on the taxpayers' dollar, and we are just trying to get our voices heard. And so what happened is where they could exit, now there was multiple exits, of course, but where some of the lawmakers did exit, such as State Assemblyman Dinowitz, Jeffrey Dinowitz, you know, he had to face the music. He's a very big supporter of different mandates and wearing his mask and all those things. So he was chased by a lot of people yelling at him and whatnot. So, I mean, this is a different type of situation. Actually, I do have a guest right now with me. So what I'm going to do is I want you, we have Joy Newball, who's with New York Du Jour. So what I'm going to do is going to have her explain to you what they've been doing. They've been walking around serving the lawmakers. So Hesher, you're going to be on with Joy. If you have any questions, you can actually ask her, but she's going to explain what New York Du Jour has been doing. And we're going to go from there.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, hi. It's wonderful. How are you? It's wonderful to have you with us, Joy. How are you?
No. I'm doing good. How are you?
Very, very excellent. I'm excited to hear from you. I hear you're out there defending medical freedom and holding lawmakers to account. So tell us a little bit about New York Du Jour and what you're up to today.
Well, basically with New York Du Jour, so I'm a member of New York Du Jour. I'm also a member of Queens County Du Jour, which is part of the New York State Assembly. And basically what we're doing is bringing back the fourth arm of government, bringing America back to its original form of government, which is the Republic. Governed by the people, for the people. And, you know, what's been happening lately, especially, you know, of course, it's across the entire country, but in New York State, you know, we have public servants who are not constitutionally compliant. So what ends up happening is these public servants, they tend to violate and trample on our rights. So everyone talks about tyranny and they talk about don't trample on me, don't tread on me. Well, we're actually doing the work to make sure to hold these public servants accountable for trampling on our rights and being tyrants. You cannot hold public servants accountable until you contract them to their oath. So to explain a little bit about that, basically what it is, public servants take an oath to the Constitution. So whether it's federal, whether it's state, or whether it's local in the county, they take an oath to uphold the rights of the people. What tends to happen now, because public servants have become power grabbers and they're influenced by lobbying, they're influenced by special interests and money and profiting from, you know, agendas outside of the rights of the people, they tend to violate our rights in the interest of them. So what we do is contract them to their oath of office. So since they take an oath to the Constitution, we the people, whether it's New York State, any state in this country, they look up, you know, their Constitution, and they basically let any public servant know, listen, we are accepting your oath of office to the people, and that contracts them and binds them to the people. So if at any moment they violate those rights, we can take them and hold them accountable. So, you know, every state is different. In New York, especially in New York City, we found a remedy to hold public servants accountable. So we're actually taking Mayor Eric Adams and also his DA, Alvin Bragg, to Supreme Court at the end of this month. So it's something, you know, very powerful. It's historic. It's never been done in New York City history. So New York City history, we, New York du jour, the people, it's not so much so New York du jour, it's the people. There are a select number of people that are going to hold Eric Adams and Alvin Bragg accountable to their oaths. And, you know, du jour has given us the education to do that. I know I said a mouthful.
No, that's amazing. Tell me a little bit more about the legal means of putting them on the contract there, holding them to their contract, to their oath of office. I'm sure there's a number of people out there wondering, how do I do this in my state?
Right. So it's not so much that it's a legal means more than it is that it's lawful. So we all have rights, and our rights are endowed to us by our creator. You know, we have the Constitution that protects us, but really what the Constitution does is keep our public servants in their box. So basically, public servants are bound to the Constitution once they swear an oath to uphold it. What we have, our rights, not all of our rights are in the Constitution. We have a right to breathe. We have a right to live. We have a right to travel. We have all of these rights. Not everything is written in the Constitution. What the Constitution does is keep public servants in check to let them know what they should not do to us, because we have rights already. So what's happening in New York and how we hold public servants accountable is we know our rights by the law, under the law. It has nothing to do with legal. It has nothing to do with anything like that. It has to do with knowing your rights by the law.
Okay, that's great. So a return to a constitutional republic. I mean, we've been calling for that for as long as I can remember. So this is a really important route to go. And how is it going? Mm-hmm. Like, is it resonating with the people of New York? Is your membership growing?
Yes. As of right now, you know, it is slowly but surely. You know, it really is a thing of, you know, people wanting to change and people wanting to see change. And, you know, being the last 3 years has really pulled a lot out of every single man and woman. You know, we've been through the ups, we've been through the downs, we've struggled, you know, we're fighting, we're speaking up for ourselves. You know, we've been ridiculed, we've been supposedly disciplined, whether it is you were fired, whether, you know, you've been arrested for wanting just to sit down and eat. You know, everyone has been through something. And because of that, people want to stand up for themselves. They don't want to keep hearing, you know, that, oh, someone's going to come and bring change for them. People are now understanding that they have to get up and they have to do what they need to do to get things done. And that's what du jour is doing. It's education. Du jour educates the man or woman to know that they have the right to stand in their power, to hold these people accountable and take back their freedom. Because freedom won't be given to us by someone who's serving in a seat. We have to hold them accountable to do right by us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've got a list here of some of the bills they're looking at signing this year, and it's pretty scary. You know, I'm a California native, but I live in Texas, and I've been watching California pass similar bills for the last, 7 years or so with regards to medical mandates and stuff. And they've really, really ramped it up. And I've been looking at the list of things that they're going to try to ram through in New York. And it's mostly the same stuff that we see in California. Are you guys working towards any fighting any particular ones of those, or is it more of a holistic approach?
Right. So it's interesting that you bring that up. So this is where it's important to contract our public servants. Because if our public servants know that the people will hold them accountable for violating our rights, none of these bills would come into question. None of these bills would even be thought of or dreamt of or drafted or placed on the floor to be voted on or even looked at, because they will realize, they will realize that these bills violate the people's rights. So once these public servants are contracted, once they know that they are responsible to the people and they will be held accountable if they violate that, no laws will be passed that will violate our children. No laws will be passed to violate how we decide to, you know, have a livelihood, how we decide to raise our children. No laws will come into place that violate our rights, because what we do with ourselves, what we do with our children, what we do with our family, what we do in anything in our lives, they would never put anything out to violate it. Because if they violate it, they will be held accountable.
That's as it should be, you know, as it is. I don't understand how so many of these people have been voted back in after the things that we've seen over the last 3 years. Okay, Joy, I really yeah. appreciate everything you're doing and everything
Thank you so much.
You've said today. Yeah, I'd love to have you back on sometime. I want to get an update from you, okay?
Thank you. I'm going to give it back to John. Thank you so much.
Okay, great.
So as you can see, Hesher, it is a wild one here. And I can tell you when they did serve, they served one of the politicians here, and the office was very frightened to take the paperwork. They didn't want to sign for it, but under common law, they don't have to. They just have to have their name listed. It had to be videotaped. So there's a lot going on, and it's a new day for politicians. Again, they haven't faced people in years. Last year, we did this outside. There was about 2,000-3,000 people, and it was about 10 degrees. But this time, we're inside, and we're walking the halls of the state Senate.
I love it. I love it. This is the way it's supposed to work. This is a good turn right here, John. I really appreciate everything you're doing, being out there, making this happen live on the ground in New York, my friend. I'm sure you've got places to be off to and people to serve letters to and people to interview. So we'll look forward to getting an update in the next hour.
All right. I'll see you in the next hour.
All right. There he goes, everybody. John Matlin. Be sure and check out his show here at TNT. All right. Yes, we're going to take a quick break over here. But before we do that, be sure and check out the Soapbox. The Soapbox has been updated over at the website. The live chat is over there also, rocking and rolling. I actually need to log into that. I'm not in there yet. So logging into that. All right. We're going to take a break over at Today's News Talk. We'll be right back.
TNT Radio's David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan.
The 17th of December was when the Queensland segregation rules came in last year. So it's essentially the one-year anniversary of when those like myself, for civil and political reasons of upholding liberty, refused the vaccine. Well, we were shut out of the economy and all sorts of activities of daily life. And so, you know, it's a memory that I'll never forget. It's also something which is in alongside sort of an avalanche of information that keeps coming our way, including, for example, the Twitter files. It's that, you know, the conspiracy theorists continue to have a scorecard that just keeps building and building and building.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's the segregation is quite an interesting word, because it's you don't have to take too much, well, a little bit of imagination to say discriminating against people because of our belief systems is not really any different for discriminating against them because of their skin colour. Things were sold and packaged in such a way that we're able to get away with a lot of things that did not fit within the values that we are meant to stand for.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
U.S. intelligence agencies are interfering in domestic politics. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, our guest is an emeritus professor of finance from Ramapo College, New Jersey. He is considered a public intellectual for writing essays about the economy in scholarly and popular publications. He's the author of Tax-Free 2000, Why the Federal Reserve Sucks, also Universal Medical Care from Conception to End of Life, and Navigating the Boom-Bust Cycle. His book, The Finance of Healthcare, was recently published. His new book, From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, An American Story, was just released. His name is Professor Murray Sabrin. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Brian. Great to be with you.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. I really appreciate you joining us. So tell me a little bit. I'm curious. I was looking at your Substack also. And by the way, everybody, murraysabrin.com, MURRAYSABRIN.com. And same at Substack, murraysabrin.substack.com is where you can find Murray's writing. I was kind of looking at some of your Substack stuff today. I'm really curious about some of the things that you're writing about, but I'd love to hear your story. And tell us a little bit about your new book, From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, An American Story.
Well, it began on a hot summer day in 1949 when I came to America as a two-year-old with my parents and my older brother. My parents were the only ones in their families to survive the Holocaust in their native Poland. My father was a partisan commander in Poland. He was commanding 230 people to fend off the German army in Poland. He did what he had to do to survive, laying mines on railroad tracks, roads, bridges, what have you. And the war ended for him in July 1944 when the Soviet army moved into his part of Poland and drove back the Germans. And he wrote his memoir in a book called We Dare to Live, which is a great little booklet that people can read about what it was like to be in Poland fighting off the German invasion. And when the Soviets came in, he was asked to join a troop to go into Germany. And he politely refused, saying, I have a son and a young son and a wife. I want, the war is over for me. And in the book, I'll let people know what happened. 90% of the people who went on this mission were killed. So he barely escaped again death in World War II. He nearly was killed in a labor camp when he was accused of stealing a hammer, and a German guard put a gun to his head and said, tell me where the hammer is. And someone intervened saying, Abraham doesn't have the hammer. And they found the person who stole the hammer the next day and shot him. So my father had some very interesting stories to tell, which he told me as I was growing up, curious about what happened to his family during World War II. And when we came to America, we settled on the Lower East Side. My father worked in a pencil factory at $1 an hour. We lived in a railroad apartment. If anyone knows what a railroad apartment is, you go from one room to the next like a railroad car. And we shared a bathroom in the hallway. And that's what my early impression was in America. I didn't feel we were poor. We had enough food to eat. And then a few years later, we moved to the Bronx with my youngest brother, who was born in 1953. And then I went through the public schools, City University, Hunter College, and became a New York City school teacher. And then I decided to go to graduate school in 1972 to get a PhD, which I eventually did, and started my teaching career at Ramapo College of New Jersey in 1985, and taught finance for 35 years, and just had a great time with students, teaching them about the basic skills you need as a financial manager. And my favorite course was the Financial History of the United States, Brian, where I took the students through American history and showed how banking and the economy were intertwined, and how printing money has always ended in a disaster, whether it's a crisis like we had the Panic of 1819, the Panic of 1907, and of course, the Great Panic of 1929, which ushered in the Great Depression. And there's a common theme through this. Printing money causes inflation, causes the bubbles that we've experienced throughout American history. And I'm on a mission to restore the Constitution, to restore the Republic. I took an oath in 1959, 10 years after I arrived in America, to I became a U.S. citizen. I took an oath to uphold the Constitution. I think I've done my job as a citizen. Unfortunately, members of Congress, presidents, and Supreme Court justices have turned their back on their oath to uphold the Constitution. That's why we have a $6 trillion budget, $31 trillion of debt, and out of control of Federal Reserve that gives us these boom-bust cycles. And a foreign policy that is not consistent with what George Washington wanted, with no entangling alliances, what President Eisenhower warned us about in his farewell address about the military-industrial complex. And so I think I have a responsibility, not that I'm required to do it, but I think as an American, a naturalized American citizen, I have to do something for the country that has been so good to our family.
Well, that's amazing. I love it when people want to do anything in their life that leaves where they are a better place than when they found it. That's a great setup for the discussion here. I really appreciate that. Let me take a quick headline with the station, and we'll come back and we'll dig in a little deeper here. Again, everybody, From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, An American Story by Murray Sabrin, who we have on the line with us here on today's News Talk, and we'll be right back.
What do they want? Exciting news.
Brace yourself.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Italian leftists are angry over Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni directing NGO migrant taxi ships to drop off migrants in cities run by leftist mayors. UK government ministers met trade union leaders on Monday in a bid to end a wave of strikes that has hobbled the rail network and strained the overburdened health system. Classified documents from Joe Biden's time as vice president were found at a Washington think tank, where Biden had an office from 2017 until his run for president.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. We are with Murray Sabrin. Again, his book is From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, An American Story. And we're just kind of going through a rapid fire get to know Professor Murray here, and what an amazing history he's got. There's so many directions we could take this in, but holding our representatives and our politicians to their constitutional duty, that really sticks out to me, sir. That's what John Matlin was calling in about. They're out there in New York today. We've got TNT Radio news producers and hosts out there on the ground in New York. And they are looking to serve lawmakers with documents declaring, the binding of them to their constitutional oaths. And I really like the sound of that. What's your take on the state of our constitutional rights after what we've seen over the last 3 years?
Well, if you want to be pessimistic, they're hanging by a thread. The First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Fourth Amendment. We have the Patriot Act. I don't know how much it's been enforced, but we know that the government has been spying on us. It reads our emails. It listens to our cell phones. Our financial privacy is gone. All our financial transactions are basically available to the feds. This is not the America the founders gave their blood and treasure for and lives more than 200 years ago, nearly 250 years ago. I think Jefferson and the other patriots that created America would be appalled as to what happened to the country. We have a runaway government. It's a runaway freight train. And just in my lifetime, since I came to America, government has grown by leaps and bounds, and we need to protect the rights indicated in the Declaration of Independence. These are our natural rights. The government doesn't give us our rights. The government's supposed to protect our rights, and unfortunately, it's been chipping away at our rights. And when a lot of people, unfortunately, think that the First Amendment is sort of optional, same thing with the Second Amendment, and the government is running roughshod over religious liberty, individual liberty, property rights. And so if you get caught up in the web of government intrusion, intervention in our lives, they can make your life miserable. In fact, it's been documented that people have committed suicide because they've been hounded by the IRS. That's not the America that I grew up with. And I'm trying to do something about it by getting on the airwaves and thank all the hosts for their kindness to express my opinion about what's wrong with America. And as an immigrant, we have obviously a very important issue at the southern border. This is not the way you come to America. My father was vetted in West Germany where we were living in 1949. We sailed across the Atlantic Ocean, came up the port of the harbor of New York City, passing the Statue of Liberty, and landed on the west side of Manhattan on August 6, 1949. That's how you come to America. That's how people will greet you with open arms, and you will be welcomed as an immigrant, like countless millions before us and afterward, by following the rules. And if you don't follow the rules, you have this abomination at the southern border, and we have no idea who's coming in, what their criminal background is, what their health situation is. And for the Biden administration to basically ignore it, I think is an impeachable offense, quite frankly, because he should uphold the immigration laws of the United States for better, for worse. That's what we have. And we had sponsors coming to America. They took care of us until my father got a job. And so we weren't on welfare, as I recall, one single day. It was all about people helping people through private social service agencies and then getting a job. That's what the immigrant experience is throughout American history.
Yeah, you know, and people work so hard to make that happen. I just feel like it must just be such an insult to so many people that have worked so hard to become American citizens as immigrants. I have a regular guest and a friend who comes on sometimes, and he's a Egyptian immigrant. And he spent, I think, the last 8 years, going through that process and, you know, integrating himself into society here and, you know, getting educated and being involved in education and science and, you know, being a true innovator. And I look at how much dedication and work that took. And it sounds like your family was very similar, you know, just in a different time period where it's like, this is the process. We're going to do this. You know, we're going to do it the right way. You know, we're going to follow the process and become legal citizens of this country because, you know, these are the kind of values that we're coming here for. I mean, it's not like, you know, and I just don't see that story anymore coming, at least with regards to our southern border. It's just like, I spoke with a rancher not too long ago. One of my journalist friends put me on the phone with a rancher on the southern border, and he was telling me some of the stories, and I'm going to try to get him on the show. He's been very busy, but I'm hoping to get him on the show, but it's insane what is happening down there. And it seems like so many of the people that are coming across, how could we ever categorize or calculate or, give them all IDs and proper papers when they come in, you know, to the tune of 2.4 million people every couple years right now and looking to increase. And like you said, we don't know anything about these people. We don't know what country they're the country of origin even, or if they've been involved in, you know, violent skirmishes in other countries, or if they're members of cartels half the time. I mean, and you know, Carrie Lake was going to declare it an invasion, but she, you know, quote unquote, lost the election.
Well, this is what happens when you don't follow basic rules. Can you imagine if we didn't have stop signs and traffic lights? It could be chaos at intersections. And so we know there are societies where traffic lights and stop signs are sort of optional, but people do adjust to that. When I was in Saigon and Cairo on vacations, we saw what happens when you don't have these rules in place. But more importantly is it's a humanitarian crisis. And for the Biden administration to consider themselves a humanitarian administration when you have women coming in pregnant with young or with young babies, and what medical care are they getting? What food are they getting? What nutrition are they getting? I mean, it's shocking to see what's going on. And for Biden to be in El Paso, which a few days ago had migrants sleeping in the streets, now it's all cleaned up. Where did all these people go? Why couldn't they do that initially when people were coming in? And by the way, don't you need a passport to come into America or a visa to come into America? And try to come into Washington State from Canada without a passport. You wouldn't be allowed to come into the country. I mean, so you can see the amazing hypocrisy of the Biden administration. And I mean, I'm here in Florida now, and Governor DeSantis sent 50 migrants to Cape Cod or Martha's Vineyard, and people went crazy. Well, that's a beautiful place to live if you're an immigrant, because I'm sure there's a lot of jobs that could be had working on the houses in the area, especially the Obama estate in Martha's Vineyard. So there's a lot of hypocrisy on this issue. There is no clear-cut thinking. And it seems to me the Biden administration wants one thing for 2024, bring in as many migrants as possible and have them vote illegally in states that would assure him re-election, if in fact he does run for re-election. I'm not quite sure he'll be doing that, but he may announce and then may drop out of the race. What he may do, which is kind of interesting, Brian, he may announce, clear the field, and then at the last minute drop out, and then the Democratic insiders appoint somebody to take his place. I could see that happening very easily.
Yeah, me too. I've got a regular guest named Joel Gilbert that comes by, and he is strongly suggesting to the, you know, he wrote a book and made a documentary about it. He's strongly suggesting that Michelle Obama might be the one that would get wedged in a situation like that. He's kind of tracking her public relations activities right now, and he's putting them on a timeline with Barack Obama, and he's noting that she's got two books, one that's already come out, one that's scheduled to come out, and then a couple of political action committee appearances that she makes. So it's like he's got it lined out. He makes a pretty good argument for it. So I would not be surprised if that happened. And I hear Hillary Clinton got a new job. She's a professor at Columbia University now or something.
Yeah.
So maybe that means we don't have to worry about Hillary coming out.
Well, maybe she's just waiting in the sidelines there, because I can tell you from observing them for many decades, she's chomping at the bit to be president, because she can't believe she lost to Trump in 2016. She thought it was in the bag. And I did a radio interview a week before the election. And again, I didn't do a deep dive in the analysis. I said, it looks like Trump's going to win. His rallies are just incredible. And Clinton just basically was cruising toward the finish line. And along comes Trump and upsets her apple cart. And so she's still miffed about that election. So I wouldn't be surprised that she makes a comeback if Biden does drop out at the last minute or doesn't run for re-election. If he announces he's not going to run, which I doubt is going to happen, I think they want to make sure that 10 people don't jump into the Democratic primary like they had last time. So I think the insiders want to make sure that Biden is sort of the placeholder until they can decide on who would be the best candidate to run in 2024. That's just my take from my observation of American politics over a long period of time.
Yeah, that's astute. I would not be surprised at all if that happened, because you know, last time it was like they had this giant rainbow tent with just everybody and their brother underneath it. It was quite the show. It was quite the show. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's a good strategy right there for them. Probably would not be surprised at all if Hillary Clinton's Columbia University job is just another public relations sort of thing to have on her resume. You know, former Secretary of State, professor at Columbia University, blah blah blah. You know, never mind the dodgy kill list and all that stuff.
Well, like I said, she's very ambitious. She's probably been resting nicely in Chappaqua, far away from where the migrants are in New York City. And so she's not inviting them to Chappaqua to partake in her community. So again, all these people are basically paper philanthropists and paper altruists. When a push comes to shove, they don't do anything to really help people in their community. Like I did, I helped create a nonprofit medical center in Bergen County, New Jersey, when I lived there. The founder called me up. He said, "I hear you're interested in nonprofit medical centers," because I hosted a conference on healthcare at Brown Poe College about nearly 20 years ago. And one of the speakers was the founder of a nonprofit health center at the Jersey Shore. And so I said, "Sign me up. What can I do?" So I, for 5 years, we planned this facility, and it opened up in 2009, and it's been thriving. It's saving people's lives who don't have insurance, don't have Medicaid. And this is the model I've been promoting for years now, that if we could create thousands of these across the country, which is easily replicated, we can get rid of Medicaid, which is costing $800 billion a year. These are centers based upon the old model of a mutual aid society that were thriving before the Great Depression. Now we call them nonprofits. And there are alternatives to government programs. And this is what we have to discuss and debate in this country. What's the best way that we should be organizing ourselves to help people in a non-coercive, friendly, humanitarian way? And that is the nonprofit sector. That is the free enterprise economy. And that would create the greatest prosperity the world has ever seen and alleviate poverty enormously. In fact, one of the best essays I've ever seen is in the Wall Street Journal today, Brian, by Bernie Marcus, the co-founder of Home Depot, who says what we need in this country is entrepreneurship, not entitlements. And I urge everyone to read it. It's right there on the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal, January 10th. And I've been saying that this for decades. Entrepreneurship is the key to alleviate poverty. And if we have that, and entrepreneurship is a common trait in every culture. There are people who see an opportunity to provide goods and services for their fellow citizens, and they do so. And Bernie Marcus was fired at age 49, created one store in Atlanta, Georgia, that turned into 2,000 stores and made him a billionaire. If there isn't a greatest success story in America, I don't know what is.
Yeah, that's pretty apex right there. Absolutely. Let me take a final station break for this hour. Everybody, again, if you want to pick up Murray Sabrin's book, it is called From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, An American Story. Go to his website, murraysabrin.com. Go to his Substack, murraysabrin.substack.com. Folks, if you're listening and you don't have a Substack account yet, you really should get one. Most everybody's on it these days. Lots of good stuff coming out there. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to Today's News Talk.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I couldn't decide on whether I should talk about all the very warm water around New Zealand or if I should talk about the bomb cyclone that is developing off California. I think what we have to do is that every time we say bomb cyclone, we must emphasize it to continually hype this. Now, what's interesting about this bomb cyclone is that when I was in college back in the 70s, we were actually writing a meteorological musical, and one of the names of the songs, done to the tune of I Am a Rock, I Am an Island, is Bombogenesis off the southeastern U.S. Instead of singing I Am a Rock, I Am an Island, we sang Bombogenesis off the southeastern U.S. So how is it we knew about these things in the 70s, and actually we learned about from people who learned about it in the 40s and 50s, and now we have all the talk about the bomb cyclone? This is TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to stay away from bomb cyclones and enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Claims that renewables are cheap or will lower prices are proven false. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. Okay, we are with Murray Sabrin and his book, of course. You're going to want to pick up a copy of the book, From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, An American Story. Okay, so Murray, I'm curious, where does the finances fit into everything that we've talked about today? We've kind of talked about what we can do with, you know, promoting entrepreneurship as a good thing. We've talked about nonprofits and that sort of model as a means to fixing some things. We've talked about the constitutional status a little bit and the southern border. So how can we tie this back into our upcoming economic outlook?
Well, it looks like we're going to have a recession this year because the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates. It's been throttling back on the amount of money in the economy. When those two things happen, as they have in the past, a recession unfolds. And a recession is basically a readjustment to the previous unsustainable boom the Fed created with its cheap money policies with close to zero interest rates, just like we had during the housing bubble and the dot-com bubble. And this is the what analysts have called the everything bubble. Stocks were inflated, bonds were inflated, real estate was inflated, the collectibles were inflated, everything went through the roof. And for the average person whose wages are not keeping up with the cost of living, their standard of living is going down. Housing prices, if you own a house that you bought years ago, it's been inflated. And so if you can sell it and take the money and run, so to speak. But the question is, where do you go from there? So this is what happens when government intervenes in the economy. So as a general principle, it causes unsustainable economic activity that has to be adjusted. Just, you know, the analogy would be if you drink too much, you're going to get a hangover. And some people use that analogy. So I've been warning about this since the 1970s, that once you have the Federal Reserve manipulating the financial sector, you're going to have a downturn eventually. And we've seen these downturns repeatedly over the last 45, 50 years, and since I went to graduate school 50 years ago in 1972. And so I've been on this a mission to educate the American people about the Federal Reserve is not your friend. It's the enemy of sound economics. And the question is, how deep will this recession be? And it could be pretty steep because things are so inflated, they have to come back to, quote, natural levels, wages, prices, and real estate. So we'll see how this unfolds as the year progresses. And then we'll be off to the races again with another upswing in the economy, because that's what the Fed does. When things get tough, they pump more money in to keep, to inflate values and wages and prices. So this is a never-ending cycle, and it's going to end one day. When, I don't know. The indicator will be when foreigners no longer accept the dollar, or they reduce their holdings of dollars, or they no longer buy government debt. And that when that happens, we have a major financial crisis in the United States, because if the government's running these huge deficits, who's going to buy the debt? And if the Federal Reserve does, that's monetizing the debt. And that's when we have a runaway inflation where prices will be galloping, not going up 7% a year, but maybe 7% a month. And that's typically what happens when the government loses control of its finances and the central bank just prints up money to make up the shortfall. This process has occurred for the last 200 years around the world, and we're not immune to it. Right now, the United States government can get away with it because people accept dollars for oil and commodities around the world. But when people no longer trust the dollar, which could be happening somewhere down the road, that's when we'll have to see a restructuring of the federal budget, which is now at $6 trillion a year, which is mind-boggling that the federal government is spending so much money. They can't even keep track of all the expenditures. And the Pentagon is getting another nearly $900 billion a year to fight us in endless wars and to have a proxy war in the Ukraine, which I think George Washington is rolling over in his grave when he said no entangling alliances. Jefferson said the same thing. Robert Taft, after World War II, said the same thing. We don't need NATO. And now NATO is still existing when the Soviet Union no longer exists. So we have a mess in foreign policy. It seems that some people in Washington, not some people, a lot of people think Ukraine is the 51st state that has to be defended. This is one of the great unfortunate situations in U.S. foreign policy, it's not about protecting American borders, it's about protecting other countries' borders. And that's why I've been outspoken, as others have, against U.S. foreign policy since Vietnam.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious, what you're right about the debt. I mean, it's just ridiculous. What about all the money that was minted and printed and keyboarded into existence over COVID, over the World Health Organization, the insane DOD budget that just gets bigger and bigger each year, that Ukraine donations, Inflation Act? I mean, all these things happened over the last few years. And on top of that, we've got the strain of supply chain woes and, you know, weird globalists talking about how we can't eat traditionally anymore. We're going to need to switch to, you know, like human austerity foods like bugs and technocratic foods like lab, you know, GMO lab foods and stuff. If all the money that went into all those programs went into something like you're talking about, like nonprofit medical centers, nonprofit, you know, help centers for people with drug addiction or homelessness. I mean, all that money that went to all those things all seem to be kind of leading towards that path of recession and inflation that you're talking about. And possibly, if you talk to people in Germany, they might say a wartime economy also. I don't know. I'm just trying to see like what could have been with that kind of money.
Well, we could have a much stronger economy with less debt, less interest expense on the government debt, and money would be freed up for productive purposes. This is really the key issue. What is money being used for? As an individual, we earn an income, we spend it, we save it, we invest it, and we keep some cash around in our checking accounts and money market accounts for the proverbial rainy day. And we also use it for philanthropic purposes. I mean, people are generous. The American people are incredibly generous. I'm in Southwest Florida. When Hurricane Ian hit, people poured money into helping people who got wiped out by the hurricane. People contributed to food banks. So when there's a crisis, people are incredibly generous. And that's what happens when you have a free society. But instead, the government is trying to fix everyone's problems with programs that don't solve the problem. Look at the anti-poverty programs we've had in the country. Trillions and trillions of dollars spent over the last nearly 60 years. And poverty is still around, though. So we think with all that money being spent, we would have poverty solved by now. But instead, the poverty issue is really a social issue, because when you have a two-parent family, that is the best anti-poverty program there is. All the data suggests that children growing up in the two-parent households have the best financial, economic, and social outcomes. You need two parents to transmit values to kids so they don't rob, they don't steal, they don't carjack, they don't commit crime. And that's the type of culture we need. Unfortunately, the government has undermined that culture with the welfare programs, which provides more cash if there's no father in the home, if there's no husband in the home. And so every time the government does something, the opposite happens. The government wants to end poverty, poverty increases. The government wants to spread democracy, we have more authoritarianism around the world. And so government programs are, to use a mild term, counterproductive. They don't achieve good outcomes. And we need to educate people about how do you achieve good outcomes in America. And that is the tools that we've had since the beginning of the Republic, of peace and prosperity and freedom and property rights and all the things that are right there in the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. You don't have to go further than that. And you want to throw in the Ten Commandments. I'm all in favor of that. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. If people adhere to that, there'd be no prisons, then there'd be no need for police. So we have a real cultural challenge in America that people are going off the rails on with a value system that is causing crime. And we know that just a small percentage of people commit crimes. And with the no bail that we have around the country, that it's a revolving door. In New York City, people get arrested, they're back the next day, and they commit more crime. And then they're back in police, then they're back the next day. So there's no good solution with the way we have now. And so what we need to do is have a really concerted effort to teach young people what it means to be a peaceful, productive individual. And this comes down to personal responsibility and parents, being parents, instead of being drug addicts or gambling or whatever they do. Because when you don't have parents guiding kids, the value system of those kids are not what you need in order to be a productive human being.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's the cultural aspect of all of this. The culture jamming really is the long pole in the tent to what got us here as a society that will accept this sort of authoritarian, just out of control, bombastic norms that we're seeing now, if you could call them norms. I guess they're the new norms. But hey, it looks like we're down to just a minute left, and I want to thank you for joining me today. I hope we can do this again. I'll look forward to having you back again. I think next time I'd like to pick your brain about central banking digital currency. If you can give us a preview of what your answer might be on are we going to see central banking digital currency anytime soon? You've got about 30 seconds.
This would be the most dangerous development in American financial history, because then the government would totally be able to track every expenditure we make and prevent us from making expenditures we want to make. In other words, it would be total authoritarianism in the economy. And this would be nothing less than economic fascism with digital government digital currencies.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, everybody. Check out the book, From Immigrant to Public Intellectual, An American Story. You're definitely going to want to get a copy of that. It's by Murray Sabrin. Thanks, Murray. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Brian. Pleasure to be with you.
Absolute pleasure. The pleasure's all ours. All right, you're listening to TNT. We'll be right back.